Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. If you have any questions, thoughts, recommendations, feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com. I'll try to get back to you in a timely fashion. It's going to be a busy month though, so, you know, don't totally hold your breath. You can like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. And it would be really cool if you rate it 5 stars and leave a review wherever you get the podcast. So I'm back with my next pocket of episodes, which can only mean one thing. It's time for Philly Sketch Fest. It's so exciting. We have 15 shows scheduled over 9 days, May 31st through June 8th. We have sketch comedians from LA and Florida and Toronto and a ton of places in between. We're celebrating the 20th anniversary of Secret Pants, a sketch troupe without whom I wouldn't be doing any of this. I'm so pumped. It's going to be such a good time. If you're hearing this in Philly or anywhere close, head to phillysketchfest.com for all the information that you need. Speaking of Philly Sketch Fest, today's guest is Nick Ryan, currently member of Fun in Moderation, based in New York City. Fun in Moderation is coming to Philly Sketch Fest on Saturday, June 1st, in the 10 p.m. block, where they'll share the bill with Brick Penguin from Washington, D.C. Tickets are available at phillysketchfest.com. Nick's first sketch is called Steve's Laptop. Nick reads the role of Mark, an actor performing a scene in an acting class, and Steve, one of the other students. I read the roles of Barbara, who's the acting teacher, and Jill, the scene partner. All right, let's go to the sketch. Interior acting studio day. Barbara, an acting teacher, early 70s, speaks to the class. I hope you all had the weekend to rehearse your scenes together. First up is Jill and Mark. Barbara sits down. Mark, a jock, leans over to Steve, a nerd.
Hey, Steve, would you mind if we could use your laptop for our scene? I left mine at home. Oh, yeah, sure. No problem. Thanks, man.
Steve closes his laptop and hands it over. Mark and Jill, another classmate, walk up to the stage and set as a kitchen.
Hello, I will be playing Mark.
And I'll be reading as Jill in a scene from Peter Strasberg's You Can't Take It Back. Wonderful. On your own time. Mark walks behind the stage door as Jill sets up at a table with some coffee, typing on Steve's laptop.
8 years, Jill.
Mark walks to Jill and forcefully closes Steve's laptop. Mark, I don't know what you're talking about. Please calm down. Mark bangs his fist on Steve's laptop several times.
8 long years, and this is the thanks I get? Now I want to know who the hell has been screwing my wife.
Barbara stands up and stops the scene. I'm going to stop you for a moment. Mark, I get the sense you're holding back. Remember, she's not just your wife, but she's your life. Let her know how upset you are.
I can do that. And Mark, would you mind maybe being a little more gentle with my laptop? It's expensive, you know?
Steve, not a problem.
Okay, thanks.
Mark and Jill get back in place and Barbara sits back down.
Now I want to know who the hell has been screwing my wife.
Mark grabs Steve's laptop and bangs it against the table. Okay, bang. Mark, you want to know who's been screwing your wife? A man who listens to me. Who sees me as a strong and beautiful woman. A man who finally satisfies me. Something you could never do. I'm going to stop you again. Now, Mark, I'm going to be honest. I'm not seeing enough from you. I need more raw emotion. I need more.
Okay, Barbara. I won't let you down. Hey, Mark, you said you were going to be a little more gentle with my laptop, but instead you were worse with it than before. It just costs a lot of money, man.
Steve, we get it. You're rich. Stop bragging so much.
What? No, that's not what I...
Just chill out, Steve, okay? Mark's doing an awesome job.
Thanks, Jill. You too. And by the way, why is he saying bang out loud? There's no way that that's in the script. Barbara, I don't even think this play exists.
Barbara walks over to Mark and circles him. I think what Steve's trying to get out here, Mark, is that acting is all about channeling your deepest personal emotions and exposing them to the world. It's therapy. Am I close, Steve?
No, not really.
Now, is there someone in your life who makes you upset?
Probably my father, Barbara.
I thought so. Use that next scene as a way to unload some of the built-up anger towards your father.
Can we please not?
Barbara sits as Mark and Jill continue the scene.
I need you to look me in the eyes and tell me, do you love me?
I love you, Mark.
Oh, I love you too, Jill. Maybe we can find a way to heal together, just the two of us.
No, Mark. The three of us. Jill places Mark's hands on her stomach. Mark and Jill embrace.
Oh, thank God. I'm gonna be a father.
Well, actually, your brother is the father.
Ah!
Mark takes coffee from the table and pours it all over Steve's laptop and then throws it across the room, breaking it. House lights come on. The class stands up and claps. Terrific! Let's move on. Jill, did you bring your phone with you for your monologue? Jill shakes her head no. Perhaps Steve could lend you his phone then. Would that work, Steve? Jill takes a hammer from her bag and readies herself. Blackout.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, Nick.
Hi.
So tell me about the sketch. Where did this idea come from?
So I wrote this sketch, I want to say 5-ish years ago. I was a transfer student into NYU, and over the summer to kind of meet comedy friends. I took a summer elective class for writing for late night TV, and I met a lot of really funny comedians that were around my age and also were looking for new friends because they were all transfer students. And one of our assignments was to write an SNL sketch after we had essentially learned like the basics of sketch. This whole class was like essentially a very condensed UCB Second City style sketch writing class.
And but this
Well,
class was at school.
yes, this class was offered at NYU just for a summer elective, and I took it to, make some friends and try comedy.
Yeah.
So I wrote this sketch. This is like a third, I want to say, pass at the sketch, just really honing beats and what a button is and just how to play the game with every single joke. I would say I wrote this sketch. It did fairly well and it made me really happy. And then I wrote like five more sketches. They all did terribly. So it's a grind.
With this class, was there a performance aspect to it? Like, did you get up, was there a chance to perform the sketch
That's a
eventually,
great
like properly?
There was not. This
Okay.
was purely a writing class, although I did want that aspect. So after this class, the next summer, I took a ton of UCB classes.
So it was just reading in the room and like, okay. Was there a particular like thing that triggered this idea to write it as your first sketch? Like, do you remember where the idea came from?
I wouldn't say there was a specific moment that I can remember. I think I really love slapstick comedy, especially as like a 19-year-old, like many years ago. Really loved like old Will Ferrell movies where he would just run around and take off his shirt and
The
scream.
fact that you're saying old Will Ferrell movies
Yeah.
is slightly
Sorry.
depressing.
I don't know. I guess I was raised on like Talladega Nights, Anchorman. I just loved his physical humor, which I feel like is not talked about enough. So I guess that was kind of my thought process in writing this was I want to write someone as physically ridiculous as he can get while having it be in a setting that really allows it, I guess, and would make everyone happy except one person who's like the guy with the laptop.
Sure. And then you mentioned, okay, so you mentioned after taking this class with at NYU, you started getting into like the UCB classes. So I asked this of people in New York and stuff, why go to UCB instead of the Magnet or the Pitt? Like, was there a specific reason why you chose UCB over the other two?
I love Magnet. I've done a lot of shows at the Pitt. I would say just from my friend group, everyone was going to UCB and they had classes, they had taken classes. So they had like a bunch of emails with like promotion codes. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that makes this a lot better for me. Even though it probably evened out to the same price as like a Pitt or a Magnet. So like, I didn't know that back then, but I don't know. I think UCB and Second City really pride themselves on like building a community where I've seen a lot of great shows at the Magnet and the Pit, but I hadn't ever heard of that community aspect there. So as like a dumb 19-year-old just looking to make friends, I never questioned anything. If my two buddies were going to something, I would follow them immediately.
I've asked that question of a couple of the people, you know, from in the New York scene, and no one's giving me like a full on like big dirt answer. It's always just been like they had a class on Thursday and that was the night I was available. Like
that's a lot of it too.
I'm never getting some like, you know, great gossip from that question. Okay, so you're going to school at NYU and Tisch. So what classes are you also doing at UCB then? Like,
so I had a performance bug. I went to school not for acting, but for writing. So I never really performed, but I did it in high school and I really enjoyed it. Just because I wasn't great at it doesn't mean I didn't enjoy it. So I took improv classes at UCB as well as sketch writing classes. So sketch writing classes to write and improv classes to perform, but also to write very quickly in the moment.
Okay. I like how you say it that way because I really have a thing about improv. Like I hate the idea that it's like, cause back in the day, like, you know, the original improv comedy thing, you know, with the Compass Players in Second City, it was they improv to write. And a lot, like at some point with Del Close or whatever, it switched to being improv for the sake of improv, like that, you know, that magic of that show in the moment. So whenever I have people that say like, yeah, I took improv to help facilitate ideas, to generate, to keep writing, I was like, okay, good. Thank you. Like,
yeah, I would say that was my sole purpose of taking improv, while also to see if I enjoyed it. Cause I knew I enjoyed performing, but improv is obviously just a whole different animal. I will say I do not enjoy doing improv. I think I always tell my friends, there's nothing better than seeing like an amazing improv group, like the old ASCATS team, which I used to see before the pandemic. I think they're called Rat Scraps now. Yeah. They're amazing. I've never seen a bad show that they've put on, but I will also say there's nothing worse than seeing improv that doesn't work or that they can't stick the landing. It's just painful to watch. So that aspect of it really scared me. Although I will say I admire people who do it and are often good at it. I think that's really amazing and just something I'm unable to do.
So we kind of skipped over a part. You talked about old Will Ferrell movies, but so I want to ask before we get back into the now, let's go to the past. Like, do you have any like first memories of comedy? Like, what were you really into growing up?
Lonely Island, I would say, was my kind of intro to comedy. I mean, when they came onto the scene in like 2005, 2006, I remember staying up late and sneaking into my dad's office because he had our computer. So I would just like go on his YouTube and watch very raunchy Lonely Island songs, which I definitely wasn't allowed to do. Yeah, Andy Samberg, so amazing. Just his genre of musical comedy, I always really loved. Just we spoke on this earlier, Will Ferrell, obviously a huge influence. And then later, the writing of Tina Fey, some amazing stand-ups like Chris Rock, I really got into. But in terms of sketch, I would say a lot of Lonely Island.
I ask everybody, and so I mean, and you're kind of tipping your hat, but do you have a favorite SNL cast member or like of all time?
It changes for me a lot. I love Seth Meyers, but obviously not as, I shouldn't say obviously, not as a cast member, but as a Weekend Update anchor. Kristen Wiig is amazing. Just her going back to physical comedy. I love Molly Shannon. You can't really, Will Ferrell's amazing too. So I Bill Hader, just for impressions. I feel like everyone says their favorite era of SNL is when they were in high school, but I think mine was in middle school, but that's only.
One of the writers, one of the old writers says that like your favorite, he can tell how old you are by your favorite SNL cast, and because it's
Yeah.
usually your like your junior year of high school.
I would say I only got started. I started very young watching SNL. My parents were super, they didn't care, which was like great in a way. And they also really liked comedy. And I think they wanted to be like both cool parents. So they were showing, like, I was staying up late until at least like right after Update ended, almost every Saturday watching SNL from
I
like when
feel
I
like
was in
that's the
sixth
thing.
grade.
Yeah, when you're if you're watching it young, you're trying to get the Update first musical act. Like that's roughly where you're gonna peter off. Like
I think what my parents used to say is, well, the show is bad after Update and it's inappropriate. So you're not going to like it, and we're also not going to like showing it to you. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like, I just never questioned it. And then later on, I think some of my favorite sketches were
Are
after Update because
those late 12:45 ones? Yeah.
there's something about, I really admire that show, even when they're not. They don't put on amazing, amazing episodes just because I know how hard it is to come up with a sketch on Tuesday, do read-throughs on Wednesday, and then you take huge, huge swings, and sometimes they don't hit. And I've been, even though I can't relate to that grind, I've been there taking huge swings and they don't hit. But also, like, when there's a sketch that is kind of one of the last sketches of the night, but it kills, like, I think a while ago, Lisa from Temecula was one of the last sketches of the night, and that's been a recurring character. So I do enjoy the fact that the smartest minds in comedy don't always know. And
Like famously, Wayne's World was the last sketch of the night, and it became, a calling card for, like it's crazy to me. Like, and everyone has like their opinions of, SNL dead every once in a while, but like I can go through Peacock and like watch old stuff, and there's a nugget of good in every episode. Like, I'm like the SNL batting average is way higher than pretty much anything else on TV, I feel.
I will always defend that show because I know how hard it is for them to write 22 episodes, and you don't, it's like, I've read a lot of books, a lot of listened to a lot of podcasts about how like writers really don't write over the summer or on winter breaks because that's not part of the culture, and that they really just write on like Monday or Tuesday all night. So when they do that and they don't always hit, I'm incredibly sympathetic to that. But also when there's sketches that do hit, I'm blown away because I'm like, wow. Like, I write sketches that have five or six passes with my sketch group, and even in the sixth pass, I'm like, I still don't feel like this is there, but we should try it at this point. We've worked too hard.
I don't want to like really like talk about another podcast too much, but have you been listening to the Lonely Island and Seth Meyers podcast?
Yes,
Like, I don't think
I
there's
do.
been
I
like a
do love that
podcast that
podcast.
really talks about like the process week to week of SNL like that has recently. Like, I really enjoy
Yeah.
it.
I love that podcast. Shout out for us for promoting another podcast. One podcasts wouldn't do that, but go listen to Lonely Island Seth Meyers podcast.
Yeah, like Seth Meyers needs it.
Yeah, exactly. He, you know. Yeah, I think just learning about the process of writing, and once again, when these super amazing comedic minds miss and they talk about their misses, I think that's incredibly interesting and also very just reassuring. This some schmuck like me who misses all the time, and I'm like, oh well, you know, the greatest can miss and it's fine, you know, I'm just gonna keep going to the plate, and it, you know, I'll have a couple good ones.
It's so wild, like, to listen to that podcast and hear Seth Meyers to be like, say that he was looking at the room and he's like, oh, I'm the seventh best white guy here.
Yep.
I need to pivot if I want to do something, like if I want to stay here. Like, it's wild.
He said his goal was to be like, I don't want to misquote him, but 70-60% of Jimmy Fallon. And I'm like, I get that. I get that too. And if I was him, yeah, I would feel the exact same way. What separates him though is, I mean, and I think he would say this too, is his writing is amazing.
Yeah. Like, all right, enough about Seth Meyers, and back to you. So did you mentioned performing, and like, so did you like do like the high school plays and musicals, or?
Yes, then unfortunately I was a theater kid, which I'm sure listeners can probably tell 5 minutes into this conversation. I was a theater kid. Once again, similar theme of just doing it to make friends. I know this is a podcast, but if people could see me, I'm not like the most physically gifted man that ever walked this earth. So sports was like out of the question. I loved shows, plays, musicals, would always try to do the comedic role just because I didn't have an amazing singing voice, but I was like, I kind of have timing. So like, and I think the directors knew that as well. So they would cast me in specific roles.
Was there a specific role that like you absolutely loved doing in that high school time, or?
Only the roles where I was with like my best friends. I would say Young Frankenstein, I was a sophomore, I think, in high school. This is like many, many years ago. But I think I had like 8 lines, and I've had a lot more lines in shows down the line, but I love that role so much because it allowed me to hang out with my best friend the entire time. And it was really cool. Just going back to improv a little, our director would let us improv a little just to get laughs in Young Frankenstein. So we would come up with ideas as like 15-16 year olds that are probably really dumb, but our casting director kind of liked, and like would get a laugh if we performed. So that was another validating feeling of like, oh, maybe I should try coming up with stuff too instead of just doing stuff.
Yeah. All right, so we'll fast forward. You take this writing for late night class at NYU, which is like recurring theme of this of the podcast is me being jealous of people that had like comedy opportunities in college, like
for sure.
Whether it's a a college sketch group or a class that's specifically to college, or like Emerson in Boston that has an entire program for Boston for comedy, and I hate every single one of them that's there.
I can echo that. I also hate it. There was a school in Boston. I think it was Emerson that had just a comedy major. And yeah, I was like, I should do that. And my dad was like, absolutely not. So that's the only reason I didn't do that. But down the line, I met people who were in that major, and they would just tell me the coolest stories. I love them, but I secretly hated them. So I understand what you're saying.
I talked to a couple of members of a sketch team up there, and they had just gone through it, and I was just like, you're a real prick. Like, I was so jealous. And I think there's one in Toronto too at Humber, but that's like, you know, a focus on comedy. All right. But you take the class, and then you start going to the UCB. When, like, what year was this that you started doing UCB? Like, are we dealing with the pandemic, or are you still in person before everything starts?
This was summer 2019.
So you just got in right before
the pandemic.
Okay, so how does the pandemic change that path? Like, does it slow it down? Are you able to take more classes? Like, do you do the virtual classes, or is it completely shut down for you?
It completely shut down for a bit, and then I tried a virtual character class that only opened in LA, and the start time was midnight because I thought it said 9 p.m., but it was just 9 p.m. in LA. So yeah, it was midnight to 2 or 3 a.m. And it was also like, this was my first character class, not a great environment to do it over Zoom. So I immediately was very pushy, but polite, and asking for like a refund because I told them I was not going to continue that class. I will say the writing classes there were still great. It was sad we didn't get to perform, because I think after 201, 301 is like a performance, which is really cool. We didn't get to do that, but I will say that is where I met an amazing writer in our current sketch group, Fun and Moderation. So that there was some good that came out of that Zoom pandemic class for sure.
Okay. I'm curious about Fun and Moderation because most of the New York teams that I know of, that I talk to, are like house teams for, you know, the various theaters. So I wonder what it's like for you to start an independent team. Like, how do the four of you get together and decide to get going?
UCB had shut down, at least in New York, really quickly after the pandemic. I don't think they were in great shape before the pandemic financially, so I don't want to speak on that just because that's all I know, but they shut down very quickly and it took them a very long time to get back up again. I think they just are doing previews now.
Yeah.
One of my friends who I met in that online UCB class is now a writer for a UCB mod team. But the four of us, I think we've always kept in touch and we didn't want to wait. We felt like we were waiting for so long. And then I had graduated NYU, all my friends had graduated, and we were like, we want to do comedy, but they are still 2 years. I mean, they were like 2 years away. So we were, I think it really just came from us being frustrated and us just doing it ourselves. And we're all such good friends. Like, I wouldn't do this alone. I'm trying to do stand-up, but I've been trying, I'm doing air quotes right now. I've been trying to do stand-up. It's very hard to do something on your own. And I think it's a lot better to do something with your group of friends who are really smart and also interested in performing and writing, but also don't want to do it alone. So just the four of us just kind of festered anxiety and frustration. And we kind of said, fuck it, let's just do our own thing, essentially.
And did you meet in classes together, or
that's a, yeah,
you, I should mentioned explain. That the one was in the one Zoom class.
So I am dating one of our group members. We've been dating for 5 years. We met at NYU well before we both did sketch, and a few of us, including my girlfriend, are background actors at SNL. So we met another one of our group members at SNL doing background. She's an amazing stand-up and just really funny. We clicked right away, and then the four of us just started hanging out, and we were like, oh, we should do something and not wait for UCB to come back.
How quickly, like, after the pandemic, do you, like, I mean, all right, UCB is not there, the Pit closes one of their buildings, so they just have the loft now. Magnet, I think, is basically still the Magnet space wise. Caveat's doing stuff. You had that little like time with Squirrel starting to do things.
I remember Squirrel
in the city. So where do you decide, like, hey, where can we perform? What can we do? Like, what was that like for you to get started afterwards?
It was a lot of cold calls and emails. there was a group that I, there was a venue from college that I knew because I was on a sketch team in college called Friends with Dads. We had performed at a venue called Asylum, Asylum, New York City, which I believe was an old UCB theater from, I think, maybe the earlier mid 2000s.
I think that's the one that's under, that's downstairs under the Gristides, or?
They've moved, but they were on like 25th and
they're like in the second UCB, second or third, yes, UCB space. Because I remembered when they, because I think Asylum was originally a Boston thing that came down. Oh. And I found it really expensive. Like the shows were more expensive than everything else was in the city when I would look at shows.
Yes, the shows were more expensive. They had a great deal with us from, because I think we were a college group. I'm talking about my former group in college. They gave us a really nice discount. And I think I just kind of knew that contact and said, hey, I'm right out of college. I'm just trying to do this. And I think they cut us a deal, but we did, it was an interesting venue. We've done a few shows there just when we were starting out. They closed. So it was another situation of, oh, we have nowhere to go, or we want to do something and, you know, no doors are being opened. And we reached out to Caveat. Caveat I was familiar with because I'm a big nerd of As Cats and Rat Scraps, the improv group. I've seen a lot of shows there. We were just fortunate enough that they were interested in having our show be put on, and we worked really hard to have a really good audience on a very bad date and time. I think our first show was like maybe a Tuesday at 9 p.m. and normally that's like 25, maybe 30 people, and we were very committed on bringing like 70, I would say. So I think a lot of friends and a lot of begging and a lot of, hey, let's go for coffee. let me take you out or whatever. So we worked really hard, not only on our sketches and our performances, but also on cultivating an audience of friends that love us. And after a few bad time slots, we talked to Caveat, and I can't say how amazing they've been enough. They, like, throughout this whole process, they really saved us. And now we're doing really great time slots with them, and because we've proven that we can bring a lot of people to shows.
Yeah, I think a lot of people in sketch comedy don't realize how much you have to play that. Like, it's not quite like a bringer. It might be worse than a bringer show for stand-up.
I think it is worse. It's worse. Bringer shows are like 3 to 5. I'm trying to bring
everyone you know in New York City.
I'm trying to bring everyone my family has ever been to dinner with. Like, I'm trying to bring 30 people just for me. And I think everyone else is trying to bring a lot of people as well.
And with people here in Philadelphia that have been doing it for a while, like, there's that kind of a joke of like, what do you do when your friends stop coming to your shows? And like, you do have to get that like audience of strangers and people that just want to see some comedy. Like,
hopefully it's, if you work really hard and you do a good job, your friends will naturally start talking to other friends of theirs that maybe you don't know as well, and they'll bring people and maybe they'll like the show and they'll talk about it or post about it. I think TikTok really helps. We are trying to get better at TikTok. I think all four of us are very nervous. We're just nervous people in general, but TikTok I think is a really important thing to get people who maybe you don't know as well to come to your shows. Instagram, of course, as well, cultivating an audience of not just your parents' friends or, you know, your sisters, whatever. But yeah, social media is really important, and it's a luxury that people used to not have several years ago when they were trying to break through. So,
yeah, can you imagine like being on a corner, like trying to flyer, and
we're just doing
it digitally now.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, social media is awful in so many ways. You could listen to other podcasts on that as well. But, in this specific way, it really helped us out.
You mentioned, you know, trying to get better at TikTok, but you do have a pretty, like, a lot of your stuff is on YouTube already. So, how, what's your opinion, or at least, you know, as fun of moderation of using internet? Because, like, I feel like you put more sketches online than a lot of other teams have, especially like live stage shot ones, not necessarily acted out like full short films. Like, why go that direction?
So going that direction, I think our motto in our group is to just keep every door open, essentially. So anyway, if we are slightly proud of something, we should show as many people as we can as possible. So obviously YouTube, Instagram, TikTok are great ways of doing that. But I also understand with other groups that they don't have the quality of film that they're willing to post. I think Caveat has an amazing film unit and live stream team as well. So we have a deal with them as well, where we take the footage from our shows and we try to cut them up and use the best parts for social media. If we love a sketch, we'll post it on YouTube and it'll live forever, which is, you know, a little scary, but yeah. You know, you got to do what you got to do.
And then the idea of it going, you know, live sketches going to YouTube and stuff, how much are you churning? Like, are you repeating on stage a lot? Like, are you generating new material for basic, like, every Caveat show?
The short answer is yes. We try to do 4 brand new shows a year, which might not sound like a lot.
No, but no, when you're it's dealing, a lot.
Yeah, it is. We are a team of 4, but we have 3 writers and we have 1 terrific performer who runs the game and is responsible for a lot of other aspects, like finding a stand-up to open the show. So we really have 3 writers writing about 8 or 9 sketches 4 times a year. And we're also on the side doing sketches we've written already, but for different venues to kind of cultivate and gather a bigger crowd. So it turns into a colossus, like a huge amount of work, which the average listener might not think is a lot of work when you're just doing 4 brand new shows a year. But if you're doing 4 new shows a year and then you're doing 10 little best of shows all across New York and fortunately Philly and, you know, Austin and other sketch fests, it turns into a lot of light travel, a lot of dusting out the cobwebs to try to remember what props are in what sketch, what my lines are in the sketch, who am I in the sketch. So it turns into a lot of work, but I think our goal is to perform more, so to do more of our best material, like the material we're most proud of.
Yeah, because I always would be in with a bunch of my team, like a teams here in Philadelphia, that like their idea was, we'll perform something live for, you know, months, however many times, and then we'll shoot it as like a short film, and that's how we retire it. Like, so I was wondering, you know, since you all are so open with putting, you know, the good stuff on YouTube right away, like, is that the retirement, or are those self things in the mix?
I think every group probably looks at it a little differently. I would say just when we were starting out and it was only our friends, we felt a certain responsibility of, our friends are coming, parents or family members are coming. We don't want to show them sketches they've seen before, even though it would be so much easier for us.
Yeah.
So I would say early on, it was a lot of, hey, this is hard, but this is also good and important to keep writing and try more stuff, and also to not let our audience down in a way. But in terms of retiring sketches, I would say we're not going to retire sketches for festivals.
Right.
Or down the line when we do a best of. I think a week, just to plug something very quickly, a week from when we're filming this podcast or recording this podcast, The May 10th, we're doing a sketch showcase at Caveat, which Fun and Moderation is featured in. So we're just doing like two or three sketches that we're really proud of, just so people can see that. So we would never try something new for a show like that. But in terms of like performing in front of our friends or like people from out of town, yeah, we'll try something new. And, you know, if something doesn't go well, that's a learning experience for us for sure.
And I guess retirement might not be the best way of saying it, because, you know, doing that best stuff where you're traveling, you know, when you're going to a new city and getting a whole new audience that you've never seen before, you do want to show them the best that you can do.
The best what we think. I mean, in terms of
audiences previously also seem to really like latch on to.
Yes, we will retire a sketch when the audience kind of tells us that this should be retired, when they don't laugh. Like, that's when we'll retire something.
How would you describe like the voice of a Fun and Moderation show?
That is a question that I think we're still asking ourselves. I would say, in terms of style, we try to emulate sketches, a sketch of, like, I Think You Should Leave, which we are not the first to try to emulate. They're everywhere for a good reason. They're an amazing show with a very specific niche brand of strange comedy. I think Conan said something like this, and I try to do this with Fun and Moderation at least. We like ideas that are really, they're so stupid that they're kind of not stupid, if that makes any sense at all, which it probably does.
All the comedy nerds that listen to this totally know what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. What we try to do is, at the end of the day, we're just trying to make each other laugh. And it's with like crazy situations or weird voices, whatever it is. We, at least all four of us, and especially the three writers, we're so similar in terms of our preferred genre and style of comedy. Like, we are the type of people that we will make plans on a Saturday night around SNL, which is the most embarrassing thing you can ever say when YouTube exists. Like, when you could just watch it the next morning, we will still just like furiously text each other being like, yeah, I see what they were trying to do for that one. Or like on cases where some of us are working that episode as like background, we'll like go home and kind of break down the episode. And, you know, we do that with I Think You Should Leave too, and other sketch groups we see. We try to see as much as we can, especially in New York City, which is such a luxury that I'm sure a lot of people don't live in a city like here, Los Angeles, or cities where the comedy scene is not as prevalent. We try to be super aware of our location privilege, so we don't take that for granted. We see everything affordable that we can see all the time. And that's just kind of like a rule we have, just to kind of keep growing and expanding our comedy knowledge, and also to see like what people find funny. I think that's a big part of it too.
I think, and that's something that I'm really trying to push with some of our newer writers here in the city. I was like, you have a festival coming up with 5 nights of live comedy with people from all over the country. Like,
yeah,
make use of that. Like,
really, like, and yeah, really
partially try. Like, educate yourself what other people are doing. Like,
I can't speak on other groups, but what Fun and Moderation lacks in terms of size of a group, with we have to be careful about writing sketches, because we really, at the end of the day, we have four performers. We can add more performers because we have friends who are super into performing if we need to, but we try to be disciplined and really just make it the four of us, because that's who we really want to showcase at the end of the day. But what we lack in size, we more than make up for in caring about it, which I think the bigger of a sketch group you have, and the bigger group you have in general, the more it's easier for people to tune out, especially when it's, every monthly thing. Yeah. It's easier for them to pick and choose when they care. And we are not allowed to do that, because if one person
is not on their A game, or they definitely don't care as much, it so quickly harms the show and the group. So yeah, I would say to people who are starting it, don't just try to get everybody you've ever met. Try to get people who are similar to you in terms of style of comedy, but also how much they care about it.
You brought up being a, you know, background for SNL. So what's that experience like on a weekly basis for you?
That is an experience that I don't talk about a lot, just because I feel like as a background actor, your one and only job is just to blend
just
in,
to be there,
a blank face, and yeah, not ruin what they have going on. But as a selfish comedy nerd, it's really interesting to just see what sketches go where, what makes it on, what doesn't make it on. I have a luxury of seeing the dress rehearsal as well all the time. And it's really fascinating to see when a sketch just kills at dress and bombs on air. And I've used a lot of those lessons for fun and moderation when, if we've done a, we actually, it's funny that we're talking about this. We've done a sketch for our last show that one of our group members was so proud of writing. Every time we did it, it was hard. Every time we did it in rehearsal, no one could have a straight face. We were all laughing. And then it kind of bombed when we did it at the show, and we were super down on ourselves, but we brought it back because we were curious a week ago at a Brooklyn show, and it did so much better at Brooklyn. So we were like, maybe we kind of were just in our heads that day, or maybe it was the crowd. It could have been so many other things, but
that minefield of, was it the audience? Did we just not set this up right?
Yeah.
That's such a weird thing for comedy so often, is knowing if something's the audience's, and I don't want to say the audience's fault, but I can't think of a better way of putting that. Did we screw up our setup of the premise? Did we miss something?
I would say for us, there's some sketch groups that are really, I really admire, especially in their performers, when it almost doesn't matter if the audience isn't invested. The actor doubles down, and sometimes they go slower and it makes it funnier. And I think we need to do a better job of, in a polite way, not caring what the audience thinks. If we are super proud of something, perform it that way, the way that you're proud of it. And if the audience isn't totally on board, maybe it's possible that that specific audience isn't on board for this sketch. It doesn't always mean that the sketch is bad. Sometimes it does, but not always. You have to be you have to be mindful of that as well. So it really is, the only advice I could ever give is to just perform and fail and figure it out. Because this is stuff where I'm still learning. I've talked to people who have been doing this for decades. They're still learning. The smartest writers at Saturday Night Live I see them. They're so proud of the sketch. And then behind the scenes, if it doesn't go well, they're nobody, they don't want to be around anybody because they're hideously embarrassed. They're doing something that is seen by millions of people. I'm doing something that's seen by, on a good day, 50 people. But I still relate to that feeling in a weird way of I get it. But sometimes you have to buckle through.
I forget which, old great stand-up said it, but when, as big as you are, as famous you are, you get that wiggle room of 5 minutes at the beginning of your show, and then you still have to be funny. No matter who you are, so comedy, you always have to bring your game for comedy.
You do. And you bring your game by caring and by believing in yourself. If you work really hard, and I'm very big on not meeting the assignment. I think it's very easy to, if you have three sketches at a show, you write three, that is meeting the assignment. I try to write 10, and then I feel great about cutting. And sometimes,
sometimes it's so clear what the answer is, and sometimes it's not, but those sketches I'm able to potentially reuse and recycle for future shows. As long as they're still current and evergreen, it's fine.
Yeah, the more you write, is more opportunity, the more possibilities you have.
It's true.
Of fixing things, of doing it well. Like, yeah. As we're winding down here, I asked the student two questions to end it out. And we actually, you even brought it up a little bit already. But what's a piece of advice that you would give to a new comedy writer? Something that you've learned, especially with your experience, you know, taking classes in college, going through UCB program, starting this independent group, and having this interesting backstage look at the biggest sketch show in the world. Like, what's something that you would pass on to them?
This might sound very simple, but I don't think a lot of people do it. So I would say your funniest friend, the conversations that you have with them, if you have great chemistry, that the level that you laugh with your funniest friend, try really hard to write that in whatever you're writing. So if go for the laugh that makes you laugh so hard it hurts, and not just like, I see what they did there, that's clever. Those are two different laughs, and the audience will be like, there's a polite laugh, like, I see what they did there, that works. And then there's a laugh where that's like, oh my God, it's like I'm with my best friend. And if you if you go for that laugh, the audience will laugh as hard as they do with their best friend. And that, when you perform a lot, and when you get to perform a lot, you realize there's a level of laughs. And when you're writing a sketch and you're super proud of it, and it still makes you laugh after a couple of read-throughs and passes, that's a great sketch. And that's a sketch that you should try to put on stage, and you should try to care about that sketch a lot, because then hopefully it'll go well. So writing not just to meet the assignment, writing to really kill it. I feel like a lot of people don't do. Which is weird, because you'd think everyone would do it, but they don't.
I've never heard you say that way, because I am very hard to make laugh. Like, I think with all the years of like seeing comedy and producing and stuff, like, you'll get me like smile, like, yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I acknowledge what you've done there, but like, when you actually get me to the guffaw and like full on like belly laugh, like,
I mean,
I love those moments for sure.
Yeah, and you always have that with a couple of your best friends, like, because they know you and they can get that out of you. Go for that laugh. I mean, even the sketch that we just read, I'm still embarrassed to say we still do that sketch, even though it was like, it's not like the most brilliant sketch ever. It was a sketch I wrote many years ago, but I think the audience likes the physicality of like going berserk on the laptop. And like, I have gone through many prop stores.
I was about to ask, how many laptops have we gone through? Or do you just have like this piece of garbage laptop that has been through every iteration of this?
No, you cannot reuse. If you do the sketch right, you cannot reuse that laptop. That's all I'll say. So I want to say maybe 6 laptops, but
okay.
I will say I got them at a bundle deal. So that was really nice as well. it's all about finding deals. And I would say the other piece of advice, which I've already said, but don't just, when you are trying to do something, if you're trying to perform, don't just try to round up everyone you've ever met. Try to round up people that you really vibe with, and they might not always want to do comedy, but if they're really smart and really funny around you and they've taken one writing class, kind of just very quickly teach them how to write in terms of format, what you like, and the two of you might potentially go far if you're both really passionate about it.
Yeah. And then finally, you know, as deep as we can get, why comedy? Like, why has comedy become such a huge part of your life?
I would say for me specifically, and I'm not just saying this to say this, I really believe this, I'm really bad at everything else.
And I'm not just trying to be polite. Like I've tried a lot of stuff. Like I suck at work. Like I'm not great at it. Don't tell my boss, but do what makes you really happy. And comedy makes me so happy. This is how happy comedy makes me. When I see something that was awful or even just didn't stick the landing, I'm still like, you know what? I get what you tried to do there. It might not have worked, but maybe with a few tweaks, like it could get there one day. Like that's how much I like comedy. I'll see stuff that I don't love and I'll feel like maybe if they fixed a couple things.
There's a certain joy that a couple of my friends and I have of like when we see something that doesn't work all the well, like going to the bar after the show and trying to like rewrite and fix it just among ourselves. Like
we do that too. Another piece of advice, just make sure the bar you're going to is many, many blocks away from the show that you just saw, because you don't want to shit talk a sketch group and then they go to that bar. Like you don't want that. So just don't, if you want to be painfully honest, travel to the bar.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah, this was such a pleasure, Josh. Thank you so much for having me. I am a comedy nerd and I love talking about comedy.
All right, a lot of chances to see Nick and the rest of Fun in Moderation. First, Fun in Moderation will perform at Caveat Sketch Sampler on May 10th at 9:30 at Caveat in New York City. Caveat.nyc for more information on that show. Then they'll go to Austin, Texas for Austin Sketch Fest on May 23rd at the Cold Town Theater. ATX Sketch Fest for more there. Then Philly Sketch Fest, sharing the bill with Brick Penguin from Washington, D.C. Saturday, June 1st in the 10 p.m. block. Tickets and more information at phillysketchfest.com. Finally, Fun in Moderation will premiere their new show with all new material at Caveat on Friday, June 28th. Caveat.nyc for more information. You can check out funinmoderation.com and follow them on Instagram and TikTok at Fun in Moderation. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketch Fest production. You can find out more information at the newly revamped phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketch Fest on Instagram at Philly Sketch Fest. The music on this episode is by the band No-No, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Like My First Sketch on Facebook, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. Come to Philly Sketch Fest.